presents the stereo laboratories of both Conan Doyle, dramatized in a radio line in January. Thank you.
some hot water. Is there a sound? Hello? Anyone? Hello?
Thank you. Thank you. She may be in danger of her life. aspects. I must say, I can't say that we were delayed. Is this Miss Burnett? Mr. Holmes. When the carriage came out, I followed it to the station. But the lady here seemed to be walking in her sleep. When I tried to get her into the train, then she came to life and started to struggle. I pushed her into the carriage and she fought her way out of the train. Then I took her apart, got her into a cab, and here we are. Oh, I shan't forget the face of the carriage as I led her away. Now I have a short life if he had his way. The scowling devil.
Excellent. That's all, Clinton. I have one more task for you. Go to the police station. Fetch Inspector Bates.
Discovered him a year ago.
Miss Burnett, but how came you into this matter? How can an English lady join in such a murderous affair?
I join it because there's no other way in the world by which justice can be gained. What does the law of England care for the rivers of blood shed years ago in San Pedro, or for the shipload of treasure this man has stolen? To you, they're like crimes committed on some other planet. But we know. We've learned the truth in sorrow and suffering. To us, there is no fiend in hell like Juan Murillo, and no peace in life while his victims still cry for vengeance.
How are you affected?
My real name is Senora Victor Durando. My husband was the San Pedro minister in London. A nobler man never lived upon earth. Murillo's policy was to murder every man who showed such promise that he might come to be a dangerous rival.
And he heard of your husband's excellence.
He recalled him on some pretext and had him shot. His estates were confiscated, and I was left with a pittance and a broken heart. Then came the downfall of the tyrant. He escaped, but the many whose lives he had ruined, whose nearest and dearest had suffered torture and death at his hands, would not let the matter rest. We banded ourselves into a society which should never be dissolved until the work was done.
And after you discovered his new identity, it is your part to attach yourself to his household and keep the others in touch with his movements.
He little knew that the woman who faced him at every meal was the woman whose husband he had hurried into eternity. I smiled on him, did my duty to his children, and bided my time. He zigzagged here and there across Europe to throw off the pursuers before finally returning to this house. But Garcia, whose late father was once the highest dignitary in San Pedro, was waiting with two trusty companions of humble station. He could do little during the day, for Murillo took every precaution and never went out save with his satellite, Lucas, or Lopez, as he was known in the days of his greatness. At night, however, he slept alone, each time in a different room.
Then, on a certain prearranged evening, you sent Garcia final instructions.
I was to see that the doors were open, and the signal of a green or white light in a window was to give notice if all was safe, or if the attempt had better be postponed.
Green and white, same colours as the San Pedro flag. But in some way you excited your employer's suspicion.
Lopez, the secretary, sprang upon me just as I'd finished the note. He and his master dragged me to my room and held judgment upon me as a convicted traitor. Then and there they would have plunged their knives into me, could they have seen how to escape the consequences of the deed. Finally, after much debate, they concluded that my murder was too dangerous. But they determined to get rid of Garcia. Murillo twisted my arm round until I gave him the address. Lopez addressed my note, sealed it with his sleeve link, and sent it by the hand of the servant, Jose.
Which one murdered Garcia?
It was Murillo's hand that struck him down. Lopez remained to guard me. At first, they were of a mind to let him enter the house and kill him as a burglar. But they argued that if they were mixed up in an inquiry, their own identities would be publicly disclosed. I have no doubt that there were times when my life hung in the balance. I was confined to my room, terrorized by the most horrible threats, cruelly ill-used to break my spirit.
I observed the bruises and the stab wound on your shoulder.
Now, thank God, I am beyond their power forever. Once already his life was attempted, but some evil spirit shielded him. Now it is the noble, chivalrous Garcia who has fallen, while the monster goes safe. But another will come, and another, until someday justice will be done. It is as certain as the rise of tomorrow's sun.
But now, legal work begins. Of course, a lawyer could make out a case for self-defense. They made £100 in the background. It is only on this one that they could be tried. Come, come, Doctor. I think better of all than that. Self-defense is one thing, but to entice a man in cold blood with the object of murdering him is another. No, no, we shall all be justified when we see the tenants of High Gables, the next guild for disguises.
I must congratulate you, Inspector, on handling so distinctive a case. Your powers, if I may say so, about the fence, seem to be one of your opportunities.
You're right about that, Mr. Holmes. We stagnate in the provinces. A case of this sort gives a man a chance. Your name is made.
Thank you. says Inspector Baines. I fancy lawyer and Mrs. Burnett. My wishes to see her was paid by Penny Sennett. House to Walters by Dean Hempstead, and the woman by Vince Wayne. The answer was Archibald. The play was directed by Roger Johnson and produced by Dennis McCarthy for Hospital.